Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Bros Pod is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoffs. Get all the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. So head to the website today or use your mobile device and get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. Bill Roden talking from an undisclosed location in Harlem, USA, on a Friday. And we've got a special guest. Before we get to the special guest, I'll bring in my good friend and co-host, great Jamal Murphy. Murph, what's happening?
What's up, Bill? Happy to be here. Happy to talk to our guest today. Talk some women's basketball in general, women's college basketball specifically. Obviously coming off huge ratings, huge success, you know, a breakthrough season that I'm sure will continue in the years to come. So I'm looking forward to it.
We shall see. Well, there's no one better equipped to do the deep dive on what's been a great two women's Final Fours, probably more, but these last two have been very memorable. Our guest to help us do the deep dive is the great Priscilla Edwards, who has just finished her first year as a head coach of the Northeastern Women's Basketball Program. Priscilla, and she's a native New Yorker. So Priscilla, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I got excited when you said you're in Harlem. That's my stomping grounds right there. So,
and I said that just for your benefit. I'm actually at should I mention? I'm in our 155th and Broadway.
Ooh, even better.
I'll get out of here before people come. So just to let you know that Priscilla is, she's from New York, played basketball in New York. In fact, we worked together on a really nice project. It was called The City Game. Nice book. And it was about hoops in New York City. And Priscilla is one of the contributors. She spent two seasons at Clemson as associate coach at Clemson. So she was able, she could give you chapter and verse on Dawn Staley. She'll give you chapter and verse. She spent 3 years as assistant coach at St. John's. And then she began her career as a director of basketball operations at St. Bonaventure. Then she became the assistant coach at St. Bonaventure, and she played at St. Bonaventure.
Go Bonnies! Go Bonnies!
Yeah, go Bonnies! Yeah, yeah.
Well, I know you're from New York. So where did you play high school ball?
So I went to Frederick Douglass Academy. So okay. It was FDA, yep, on 145th.
Yeah. Okay. High school or academy.
148th and 7th Ave on the Ave.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So where did you play? I mean, were you in the generation? Because a certain generation, we all just played in the park. Then after that, it became like nobody played in the park. I mean, you were like a scrub if you played in the park. If you played like in the gym. Where did you end up? Where did you play during the summer? Were you in the park?
So I played in the park for sure. We had a rotation of courts we would go to and play at. I mean, I played AAU for Douglas Panthers. And so, you know, 103rd in Columbus. And the summers were the best because you just had a rotation of tournaments, whether it was, you know, over in Lincoln Projects on 135th. We played in Rod Strickland tournament over there on 135th too. That court is famous because it was in Above the Rim. So, you know, a lot of those courts that you saw in those movies, it was just where we would either play tournaments or just go shoot around, you know. So there was never an empty court in the city when I played. So it was definitely about playing outside.
Yeah, give us a time. So our people now, and you should really know this because your bread and butter has been recruiting. I mean, that's like the lifeblood. Mm-hmm. It was your lifeblood when you're an assistant, and now it's really your lifeblood as a head coach, is getting people in the pipeline. So are people still recruiting? I mean, tell me about the playground scene, or is that just part of a past era?
It's definitely a different time. You know, I go home, I visit my mom, and like I walk by some of the courts I played on, and they're pretty empty. You know, I think a lot of like training has co-opted the play in the park culture. Everybody has like a trainer. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, it's kind of taken away from some of the, I don't know, the allure of just going out in the courts and kind of learning, because you're playing against guys or whoever's around. So, you know, the playground culture is definitely different. I do think it still exists some. You just got to dig a little deep for it. You know, people want to play indoor now. They don't really want to deal with the sun and the elements.
I know. Maybe playing on like harder surfaces. People are against that now. You mentioned the training aspect of it. You said there's nothing wrong with that. Do you really think there's nothing wrong with that? Because most coaches I talk to kind of poo-poo the training. Like everybody has a trainer, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, everything has its pros and cons. That's the thing. Like, I think a trainer's ability and knowledge is a big factor. You know, you got to know what you're doing. Like you see a lot of trainers do a lot of, people coin them clown drills, you know, because they got cones everywhere and they're jumping through hoops and it's like, it looks like an obstacle course, like not that type of stuff, you know, but like legitimate training from someone who understands who they're training and what they need to be training for. You know, I think there's a lot of, you know, trainers who have like women's basketball players working on NBA type stuff. And it's just like, it's not really going to translate for a high school girls basketball player. They don't need to be working on that, right? So like, I think the level of competency is the key. It's like a trainer that knows what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So Priscilla, I mean, there's so much to get into. So exciting to have you on here. Take us through, first of all, we just came up with maybe one of the most exciting women's tournaments ever. The viewership was off the chart. And to me, I just don't see it as a one-year thing. I see it as basically 2 years. You know, I was at the Final Four, the men's Final Four this year in, what the hell was it? Phoenix in Glendale. And it was, I mean, it was okay, but everybody was like riveted in Cleveland because that was ground zero. And not even Cleveland, but even everything leading up to Cleveland. Then last year, I was in Dallas for the women's Final Four. And that was riveting. So just give me your thoughts about this year. I mean, South Carolina, let's start there and work our way back. South Carolina, you know, great performance. Just your thoughts on the game itself. South Carolina, Iowa's revenge game, you know, just your thoughts as a practitioner.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're in season, you don't get to watch as much, at least not as like a head coach, like, you know, you don't get to be a fan because you're in it. And so, you know, as you got closer, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and then when the Final Four was set and it was those teams, everybody was like, okay, we're going to get what we want. You know, we're going to get that rematch. So, you know, I think it was an incredible game. I think it's just been, it's been an incredible season just because there's been so much dialogue around like our game, and it's been so much like there's been so many you know, just captivating players, moments, like storylines. Like it's really rare. I think that's what made this year so different from other years, is like we've always had good basketball going on. We've always had that going on, but now because there's so much more coverage and there's so many there's so much more investment in the stories behind our game, this year was a culmination of that, because you had like the Angel versus, you know, versus Caitlin Clark. You had the South Carolina versus Iowa. You had the Iowa versus LSU. Like you had just so many different, you had the underdogs, you know, and that shocked the world in NC State and Oregon State and the Elite Eight. So there was just so many things that were going on that you could tell stories about, that I think it's what really captured a lot of people, you know, and everybody that was a part of it kind of picked a side. You know, you had people, the folks who were riding for Dawn, like the fams, as she called them, like they ride for Dawn. They ride at Dawn for Dawn, you know, and then you got, you know, the Iowa fans. I don't know if they have a name, like, I don't know, the Flying Bluters or something, but they were rolling deep, you know, and then you got everybody else who just loved Caitlin Clark, you know. So it's just like so many stories that just made people so excited about the game itself. And then when the game happened, like, yeah, it didn't disappoint.
Right.
It was just like, right, the drama of like them going down, of South Carolina going down early. Dawn doesn't even call timeout. You know, then they flip it. Then they switch the matchup and Raven's guarding, like, Caitlin comes out hot. Then Raven guards her. And, you know, Caitlin Clark waved off Raven last year. So, like, there was just so much that was into it that it just ended up being one of the greatest games, like, ever, you know?
Yeah. How much did you feel any of that excitement during your season, your first season at Northeastern? I know we're talking about South Carolina and Iowa, yep, Caitlin Clark. But meanwhile, what was happening, you know, out there? Did you feel any of that?
Yeah, we were trying to get to six healthy players. That's what I was feeling. We had a season of adversity. I mean, all the things that when people tell you when you move over a seat, like, you don't know what to expect because you don't know what you don't know. And so you get all excited for it. And then you start and then the things happen. Right. And for us, it was injuries. I mean, we lost about six players to injuries this year. So, like, for us, it was more about taking what was supposed to be a promising season, because we were, you know, we were coming off a regular season championship and, you know, we had these returners and everybody was excited, to like, okay, like, we're down, you know, but we're not out. Like, we still got to find a way to salvage, you know, the season. And I was just really proud of our resiliency, because for me, it was just like, you know, you don't know, you don't expect it to go that way. But when you're in it, that's when the real coaching begins, because you got to show up every day. Like, we had a stretch, we're losing games, you know, you can't allow the team to lose hope. And, you know, for me, I found joy in almost finding ways to still make it about growing. I still wanted to feel like we were growing in the midst of, even if it wasn't coming in wins, like, are we getting stronger? You know, are we getting more resilient? Are we getting smarter? Are we taking care of the ball more? Like, just finding little things that you could still say, hey, like, we're growing, like, we're getting better. So for me, it was that. It was still exciting because it was my first season, you know, and just being able to, like, we went out to our conference tournament. We had six healthy players. And one of them shouldn't have been playing, you know, she played with the grade two ankle sprain, and we won. Like, we won a conference game after forfeiting the prior two games. And to see, wow, like, the excitement and the joy of our team, knowing that we were literally dragging our way to the finish line, to me, that's what really propels success stories. You know, you go back to South Carolina, they were getting beat up Dawn's first couple years, you know, like, she took that program literally from the bottom to the top of the top. But people who are just now becoming fans, they don't know anything about those years. They just are seeing that she's crushing it now and they're getting all the recruits. I mean, she came and took a job that, like, at the time, nobody in the country wanted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you look at things like that, it gives you hope, you know, gets you excited about the future too.
Yeah. How did she do it? Like, from your perspective, I mean, like you said, you've known her, you followed her for a long time. How did you get to this point?
The secret sauce, man. Some people just have it.
Right.
And I think a lot of coaches, especially Black women coaches, like, Dawn is the blueprint, you know, because she was an incredible player since high school.
Right.
And then she had to be convinced to coach. She didn't even want to coach. Like, she got convinced, like, hey, you know, in the off seasons, you know, you should think about taking this job. So she takes a Temple job reluctantly, because everybody else could see her greatness, you know. Maybe she didn't see it in that way, everybody else saw it. And so she takes Temple on, immediately gets that thing rolling, right? And so she's crushing it at Temple, and then she goes to South Carolina. And again, this program, nobody, you know, is talking about, nobody knows about. And on the women's side is interesting, because not a lot of players want to take a chance on places that aren't established. At the time, it's like UConn or Tennessee. That pretty much was it, right? If you were a top player. And so for her to get there and really just galvanize the community, she's someone who just really brought a community into it that didn't really care about women's basketball. And then, like, getting players to believe the vision that was coming. Like, she talked about you know, yes, we're going to win here, all those things. But she talked about more so like how she can help them accomplish their dreams and their goals. And she, I think she refers to it like she's a dream merchant, right? Like her job is to help, you know, young women's dreams come true. And then I think when they got their first hometown player to like to stay, that was really good. It was before Asia, I'm blanking on her name, but like she got that first player to say yes. And that just, that changed it. And they immediately had success. And then you get Asia Wilson and it was just like, forget it, you know, but just from the ground up and just really having visions, like not a lot of coaches are visionaries. And I think she's a visionary, you know, and she gets people to see her vision and believe in it too.
You were saying, you're joking somewhat, that she didn't recruit you. I mean, you were kind of,
you know. She didn't. I was at a Woman in Sports Foundation dinner. I got invited out of high school and I was presenting an award and she was backstage and I rolled up on her. I was like, I want to go to Temple. Like, what's up, Dawn? She's like, oh, really? Okay, that's cute. Like, didn't pay me any money. You know, but she was good about it. And then I get to St. Bonaventure and we play them. In the first couple years, we got like hammered because they were really good. They had like Kamisha Hairston and Candace Dupree, who's a longtime pro coaching with the Spurs now. And then we got good, like my junior year, and we beat them. And I was like, see, Dawn, I told you I was going to beat you. Like, But even when I got into coaching, you know, she remembered me from my playing days. She was one of the coaches always like, give me advice, things like that. You know, still to this day, you see her on the road, you see her recruiting. You know, some coaches are laser focused, like don't talk to me, anything like that. But like, she just never was that way, you know, so it's really hard to not root for her, you know, in terms of what she's doing and the inspiration that she's giving so many of us as young coaches too.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Getting back to this season with you know, you had Hannah Alzago and Juju Watkins and Caitlin. I guess my question is, particularly with Caitlin going to the WNBA, Angel Reese going to the WNBA, do you think that the excitement, how much of the excitement and the pub was about Caitlin Clark? And you think that will be replicated when we go into this college season and Caitlin is in the WNBA, Angel Reese, but you think there'll be the same? That leads to kind of a political question, but.
Yeah, it was a tricky one. It was a tricky one, you know? I think, first of all, Caitlin Clark is an incredible player. Like there's no doubts about how amazing she is, right, as a player. And she deserved all of the attention and what she brought. Like she brought people into the game that weren't even following it, right? So that's always a plus when people are talking about a player, you know, on the woman's side and in college at that, when they don't really watch basketball, right? So she had that type of level of impact to where, I mean, men, women, everybody, children, like pro players, everyone is talking about her. I think where it gets tricky is just the media sometimes. You know, they got what they got, you know, and they got when they pick the one, when they crown the one that they want to be the one, that they're the one, right? And so where it gets tricky is even in a season where South Carolina can go undefeated, right? Undefeated, not lose a game, win a championship after getting upset last year, how headlines and pictures and tickers are still talking about a player who didn't win, right. Who didn't win and who, you know, played against this team who, again, was undefeated. All these stories, right? Like that, quite frankly, weren't even told to the level they needed to or weren't celebrated to the level they needed to. I think that's where sometimes it's like, you know, fans and supporters and people of the game, they're just like, we got to keep, you know, we can tell the stories, but we also need to know when someone deserves their flowers, right? And South Carolina deserved their flowers this year and to the level of where they completed the mission, right? And so they should be the talk, right? It shouldn't be South Carolina wins as the headline with a picture of something else besides South Carolina, right? And right. So I think that's where sometimes it gets a little tricky is because, you know, the flowers aren't always evenly distributed. But I get it. She's a generational talent. So, you know, people want to drive that to drive the people who are now fans and watching. But I do think it got a little lost this year in terms of the greatness that season was for South Carolina.
No question. Do you think overall, though, do you think As Dawn Staley, you know, said after, you know, when she graciously thanked Caitlin Clark after the game, she kind of got both sides of it, where she thanked Caitlin Clark for bringing people into the arena and bringing more fans into the game. But then in the press conference, she also lamented the fact that you know, she thought she, you know, her, what she had done or what the, her team had done should have been, you know, more of a story. And it, I mean, you mentioned it yourself, undefeated, really two straight years,
yeah,
undefeated.
One loss and two years. I mean,
really, you know, getting to the Final Four undefeded, like, two straight years, and then 1 year winning it all. Which is wild.
It's crazy. It's insane. Like,
it's like all of the attention that Dan Hurley's getting now. Mm-hmm. Staley should have gotten the same. Should get that same attention. Like, you know, just a ridiculous job that she's done. But yeah, and the team, of course.
Right.
Like, I mean, and a team that she basically put together. I mean, she had like four new players.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, which is
starters, draft. Yeah. Like. Yep. It's really impressive. It's really impressive. And so, unless, again, when you're someone who is a sports enthusiast or in the game and understands it from that level, you're looking at that and you're just like, wow, right? Like, you're like, yes, wow, this is a very exciting player. But like, as a coach, I'm over here like, how in the heck did she do that? Like, you tell me I got to put a brand new team together pretty much and not only win a championship, but not lose at all. I mean, from the Camilla Cardoza shot, you know, where Tennessee had them all but beat in their conference tournament, to where Camilla Cardoza banks in a three. And that was her first three-point make of her career. Like, you just can't make that stuff up, right? And so, you know, it's like, they would be filming movies in future years about a team in a season in a year like that, right? And so you hope that something like that doesn't get lost in the greatness of something else, because that is really great as well. And so with the women's side, I think it's still a fight to get folks to recognize. You can tell multiple stories, guys. Like, you can acknowledge multiple greatness, you know, things that were great in a year. You don't have to pick or choose. You can literally highlight both. Yeah. It may mean more coverage, but like, that's a good thing, right? So,
and I think the elephant in the room, right? Go ahead, Jamal.
No, and I think to some extent, it did happen. Of course, a lot, Caitlin kind of overshadowed a lot, but there were, as you mentioned, there were so many stories this year. There was the LSU story, there was the Angel Reese story, but then you had, you know, you still had Paige Becker's cup, you know, coming back, but then you have young players like Juju Watkins. And that's really where my question is, because I don't think it's a 1 year thing where Caitlin leaves for the WNBA and people forget about it. I think people were drawn in and now they were able to recognize other big stories, you know, such as a Juju Watkins and, you know, you being a coach and recruiter and you're right there, you're in the game. You see the development of younger players, see high school. And I've noticed just the skilled, there just seem to be more good players on the come up, like even from younger ages. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like it was a perfect storm this year, but it's coming. You guys, it was just a matter of time.
Yeah. I think there's more coverage of players. Like, because there's always been good players like that. That's the part that I think gets missing, too, is like there's always been good players. We're just in an age where there's highlight videos, there's Instagram, there's TikTok, there's platforms like Overtime and Pass the Ball and, like, you know, places that are devoted to covering women's basketball, girls' basketball, the stars of it. So you're exposed to them more. People knew about Juju coming into it. People knew about Hannah coming into college because they already had a following on Overtime and they already had a following on some of these other platforms. If Shamequa Holtzlaw had that, you know, back then, if someone was following Cheryl Miller her freshman year, you know, at LSU, or Cynthia Cooper, like, they would be in the same conversation and people would just say, oh yeah, like, yeah, it's going on, right? But you only got a chance to really see them, you know, Cynthia Cooper when she went pro in the WNBA, right? And Cheryl Sluice when she was pro. But they've been cooking. You know, they were cooking the same way Juju and some of these other players were. So
even a Caitlin Clark, because I was actually across my social media feed, I saw highlights of Candace Parker at Tennessee, and you forgot how good she was. I mean, it was she was ridiculous,
and that wasn't that. That was my time. You know, her right. her point guard was my teammate Shannon Bobbitt, and if there was coverage of Shannon Bobbitt, what she was doing to players and grown men since junior high, high school, in Rucker Park, in Dykeman, in King Dome, I mean, you know. Her NILs would have been off the chain. she literally was one of the most exciting players of, you know, our time. And it wasn't that long ago. So I just think the biggest thing is just like, and it's a good thing. It's just, there's just so much more investment in covering players earlier. And so we're finding out about who these players are in California, in New York, you know, in all these places where before you just had to be in the city. You had to be at that Dykeman game. Right. Or that King Dome game or West 4th Street game to see that player do it. Now you just got to pull your phone out and you're just like, oh, who's this girl from California? Like, she's good, you know? Yes. So they're getting a fan base a lot earlier.
Yeah. So two things before we say goodbye to the Caitlin Clark thing. And I guess the elephant in the room was, is it because she's this, you know, white girl who's like, is a phenomenal talent. Mm-hmm. You know, phenomenal talent, but a white girl. How much of what we're talking about is that dynamic, or can the talent create another story next year? In other words, she's gone, and I guess when I think about this, I'm thinking, well, yeah, if you have somebody who comes up who's incredible as that, you know, whether it's Juju or whoever mm-hmm. who's doing something spectacular, will the spectacular nature of play trump, you know, the fact that, well, maybe we're looking for this a white person to give us clicks? Or do you think that the foundation has been laid, that yeah. they're just it's a great game, people are drawn to it, and it kind of doesn't matter who steps up?
I think both can be true. I think, you know, a foundation has been laid where talent is now being showcased and that talent is now being seen and celebrated. I still think some spaces have a ways to go in terms of like the narratives that get created around players, right? You look at the Angel Reese narrative of like, is she a villain or not, you know, versus like, you know, Caitlin, is she a villain? Could she be seen as a villain? You know, like, is she, you know, not? So I just think it's more so on the media and what they choose to create, you know, and how they choose to create these stories and what they choose to focus on, right? Because if they didn't highlight the whole this thing and everything like that, it doesn't become a thing. It just becomes two players competing and you know, in a heated debate and talking some smack to each other, right? And so where it got turned into a thing, and it's the good part of sports, is like you start these stories of just like, oh, a villain, a, you know, hero, this, that, the bad guy. Like it's what makes it exciting in a sense. But I think for our game and where we are, because it's still, again, new to a lot of people, they take it and turn it into something different. You know, it's a different conversation than if it would happen in men's basketball, college basketball. And, right. and that's where, you know, being a woman comes into play. You know, would it be a big deal if so-and-so did it, you know, this men's player did it or whatever, like that always ends up coming back around. But ultimately it's what the media chooses to make it about. And I think if we continue to make it about the sport and the game and the talent and things like that, while also still having the conversations around the other things, right. But not getting lost in the other things, because the fact of the matter is these are really talented players we're talking about. Right. Really elite players, and there's a lot more of them coming, and how they choose to market them or how they choose to talk about them and things like that is what's going to determine how, I don't want to say the casual fan, but like some of these other people who don't look beyond those clickers or ticks or headlines, you know, are going to think. It's going to shape that. So
yeah.
Where do you think the game is now, you know, compared to, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago? Do you see more acceptance in terms of, you know, the game and the participants in the game? And then, you know, what what do you think it is? What's the difference between women's basketball? Like, why do you think it hasn't, you know, gained the notoriety sooner, you know, compared to like a women's tennis or something like that? Like, what do you think?
That's a lot. That's a lot.
I know. I'm sorry, but
no, it's good. It's good. It's fine. It's still new. It's still relatively new. You think about the WNBA, like, right? Like, we just celebrating, like, you know, 25 years. Like, it's all so new.
Right.
And so, like anything, it just needs the time to just grow into its own thing. It needs its time to you know, have its moments and pivot to what it needs to be, right? Like, I think about the WNBA when it first came about and I was a young girl, like, watching. It was way different than now, right? Like, how it's being marketed, the teams, the locations of the teams, all these things. But it should be, because it should be ever growing and changing and adapting. The NBA has too, you know, whether it's rules or how they appeal or things like that. So I think it's new, and I think people just need to give it the grace to become great. It's already great, right? But, like, just give it the grace to go through the things that all major sports leagues, all major things have gone through. And so, you know, I think that's one part of it. I think it's in a great place overall. I think more and more girls can aspire to play it and be a part of it, because now, again, they're seeing more examples. They're getting excited about it. They're seeing the new generation of talent that's coming and captivating them. They're connecting with them in a different way because of social media. You know, like, we're seeing them on TikTok being normal, and they, you know, like, all their right. have so much more access to know and love these players on off the court. And when you think about a lot of you know, professional players, other sports or things like that, really even men's basketball, you know, a Kobe fan or a LeBron fan, the fandom runs deep, right? It's like, if they switch a team, I'm now a fan of this team. If they do right. this, like, and we're getting to a place where that's existing because of all the things that have happened, and really because of the investment that's happened. That's what we're talking about, is investing and believing in the sport. And now it's generating what we knew it was always capable of. You know, more people watch the women's, you know, championship than the men's. You know, surprising to some, but we always have known we've had a great product. And we also know that there is a want and a need and excitement for it. We don't need to appeal to people who are just never going to be fans. Right. We just need to find the ones who are fans and get them a chance to really see what we're doing, you know, on this side. So,
yeah. Right. You know, I was thinking, Jamal kind of touched on it, that you could go and watch. I mean, women's tennis for many people is much more popular than even men's tennis. And nobody has any problem with the whole gender thing. It's great. I mean, Serena is great. And same thing during the Olympics, during track and field, or track and field in general. People can watch the women's sprints, and nobody's comparing it to the men. It's his own thing.
And I guess in tennis, there is some of the comparison and double standard in tennis, you know, with what Serena had to kind of endure in terms of, is she the greatest, you right. know, tennis player of all time? Is she the greatest female tennis player of all time? The pay discrepancy still, you yeah. know, there's a racial component to it too that exists in tennis. So tennis, I will say, track, I believe it more fits in that line. But I do think in tennis, there's a lot of, like, you know, they say, well, because women's tennis matches aren't as long, they can't be compared to men's tennis, right? Right. So that's why that should negate right. why she's not the greatest tennis player, which she is. She is, right. well, she is the GOAT.
Well, this sexist society we live in, that will always be the case, no matter what the sport is.
But, I think anybody who would seriously try to argue against Serena would be booed yeah, out of the room. I mean, he would...
Well, in this crowd, yeah. In this crowd, yeah.
Yeah, maybe in this crowd. I'm just curious. You just so you were an assistant for so long. What's it been like when you make that jump, like you said, to the next chair? What's that jump been like? Because you've been an assistant for a long time. Now you get your shot to have your own program. What's that been like? What's the whole transition been like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm approaching 1 year, like, anniversary. It's actually wild, like April 20th. I took a job. So You alluded to it being a jump. It feels like jumping off of a cliff with a parachute that you're not sure is going to open or not. So it has been a jump for sure. Everything they say about it is true. You know, the good, the bad, all of it, right? Like they say, you just don't know what it's like when you take the shift over. And you don't, you really don't. Like you see head coaches as an assistant. I was always right there with my head coach. But yet I felt this year so many times like this is what was happening. Like there is no way I'm calling all my mentors and coaches I work for. I was like, this is what was happening. We're just like, yeah, I tried to tell you.
Like what, for example? I mean, I know there's a lot, but like
injuries, like you mentioned.
Injuries. Yeah. Like, you know, trying to sort through, you know, you come in, you have your plan. I'm like, all right, I'm going to come in. I'm going to watch film. You know, I'm going to plan practice. We're going to go do practice. It's going to be great. And then you come in and then someone's at your door waiting to talk to you about something. And then you get the injury report and like four people can't practice. And then you get the message from the GAs that the scout guys can't come. And then you show up to practice and, you know, they just had a test. So everybody's in a bad mood. And then, you know, like, and so, you know, and then you get a call from a recruit. She's like, I'm going somewhere else. And you're like, you know, like it's just like any given day, there could be so much that like, you know, you have your plan, but then you have what actually is going to happen. And so you just think about how level-headed and balanced you have to be. Like you really can't get too high or low. You got to make so many decisions in the course of a day. So many, to the point where like the first couple months I was coming home and my husband was like, what do you want to eat? And I'm like, no more decisions. No, like, I don't care. Like whatever's there, I cannot make any more, you know, because everything comes to you. Hey, when do you want to play this game? Hey, like, you know, what color uniform? Hey, like what offense do we this, that? So it definitely is a lot and a difference. Whereas an assistant, you just have to be a specialist at your things. You might have you have your position group, you got your scouting reports that you got to do, you got your recruits that you have to get, but like those are your things and you know what they are and that's what they are. Whereas in this position, you have to oversee everything and you have to have a vision for everything and make sure everything is operating in the way you envision it. And that requires people, managing people. You know, you're responsible for over 50 or so people from the different departments, your players, support staff, your coaches, your assistant coaches. So really just managing that was the biggest thing on top of like, you know, the basketball. The basketball part actually was the least of the concern, to be honest. It was just the other parts of it that were really, you know, that were a lot at times.
How does recruiting differ from being the head to the assistant or the assistant? You're like deep in the weeds, pounding the pavement. How does it change when you're the head coach?
You have to get your staff to understand the vision of the type of players you want. Because if you don't have the type of players that you want to coach, or if you don't connect with them, or they're not the style that you want, then it's really hard to complete the vision of how you want to play, or what you want your culture to be, or all these other things. And so recruiting is so important. Recruiting and evaluating are so important because people sometimes just bunch recruiting into just saying like recruiting, but it's really evaluating because you have to evaluate, is this player what we need? Is their personality what we need? Is their skill set what we need? Are there faults? Can we deal with what their shortcomings are? Can we develop their shortcomings? So you have to have a really keen eye to develop that. And so how it's changed as a head coach is like, I have to articulate that in a way where my assistants can go and do it. Whereas an assistant, you kind of are getting it and you're like, all right, gotcha. You go and you try to find that. Whereas I'm not as much trying to go and find that, but I'm hoping that they can go and find that and bring that back. And then my job is to like get them to see the vision and want to come. So again, it's just a very, very more like overarching view of things. Instead of being in the day-to-day of, I got to call her every day, right? Like assistant coaches, you're on the phone, you're finding out their favorite color, you're going to every game. Whereas I may pop in for a game, but when I do, I'm hoping that it's what I want to see.
That's interesting. So how do you, you know, as an assistant, you know, you're going out, you're basically taking directions in terms of what kind of kid to bring in. But while you were an assistant, did you have your own ideas about you know, the type of players and team that you wanted? Or did you just have to, like, suddenly start thinking about that? Like, I'm always fascinated by, like, culture and how coaches build their, you know, quote-unquote culture.
Yeah, it's a combo, you know. Like, ultimately, your job as an assistant is to make your head coach look good and you know, be able to do what they need, you know, and recruiting is obviously a big part of that. And so when they're sharing things from a standpoint of culture, I remember being a younger coach and just thinking, like, but she could play, like, she could play, like, she can play, you know. But then right. When you become a head coach, or even when you become a more experienced coach, you learn how important it is, right? And so when you're having these conversations with the recruit, with their parents, with their coaches, and they're trying to, like, dance around the fact that this kid isn't, you know, the greatest teammate or whatever,
right.
You find yourself flicking, like, oh, I know she can help us on the court, but if she comes and the culture isn't, you know, her mentality around what's important, you know, she doesn't think culture is important, you're not really going to get a chance to see the talent, because there's always going to be something. And then on top of it, it's going to affect your team. And now you're not going to be able to bring in better players because your culture is going to be fractured. So you hear more and more a lot of coaches talking about it, Dawn talking about it, you know, Gino talking, all the coaches, all the main coaches and the good successful coaches, they talk about it because they understand that, like, and they've gotten to a point where their culture matters and comes first and is weaved into everything. And it doesn't matter how good they are, because they know how important the culture that they've built is.
So how deep is the pool for Selah? That's the one thing I was trying to get at. Now, from the time you finished playing in college to now, and now as a recruiter, and we start the conversation about the lifeblood is recruiting. Mm-hmm. How deep is the pool now, the pool of talent?
It's just a different pool, because you got the transfer pool and you got the high school pool. And so everybody's swimming in the transfer pool right now. People are dipping their toes into the kiddie pool, so to speak. You know, it's just a different way of recruiting, even from when I first started coaching to now. You know, you have, like, the fall season where it's like you're going all in for your high school kids and trying to find good players there. But the reality is everybody wants to be older faster, and nobody wants to get younger. And so you find that you're trying to balance between bringing in high school players who are foundational players. They're going to be there for years. They're going to grow in your system. You know, they're going to embody your culture, to now having to fuse that with transfers, grad transfers. I got 2 years left. I got a year left, you know, things like that. So the pool has, I would say, it's expanded some just because of the impact of transfers.
Yeah, it was so funny. Not funny. We think about the transfer portal. I remember we talked a few days ago. I forget what it was. We said, okay, you call me, so, but I got to work the transfer portal or something. That's like a whole other thing, right? You got to. Tell me about that, because I find that fascinating. Probably even in your lifetime, you're younger than me, but still we're all in the thing where this, nobody envisioned this, where it's like totally what between NIL, what we used to call pay for play, there are no penalties. It's like, now here's a boatload of money, and it's for you, and it's open, and it's all good. You know, everybody's like cheering. There's nothing wrong with it. Here, take it, it's yours. And then you can transfer once, then you piss me off, I'll transfer again, now transfer again. So it's totally wide open.
So many things have changed, but, you know, that's one thing that's always a constant, is change, right? So as much as we're in the midst of it, I think it's always tricky when you are in the midst of something new. You know, everybody had a point where they were in the midst of a drastic change, and those first versions of it, you know, it's like getting the first iPhone. It's like, I'm gonna wait for the second version of that to come out, because I know that first one isn't gonna quite be right. And I think the transfer portal, we're in the process of that, where it's like the first version came, there was no window. So you had kids hopping in the portal, like, you know, week before season and stuff like, and it's like, so it was really hard to figure out what your rosters are going to be like, because someone can say, oh, yeah, I'm staying, and then leave at the very last minute. Now you can't replace them. And so there's that first version that was just wild, right? And then now this is really like the second version-ish where now they have a timeline, right? So you come in on this date and it closes on this date. And so that's presented a new wave of like adding urgency behind what folks are doing. It's added a little bit more predictability. And when you know, like by this date, no one else is going to say I'm leaving, right? Yeah. And so, but there's still a lot of things with it that still are all over the place, right? And so I think it's working itself through the process of becoming like our norm, because it's going to be, it is. But there's still a lot of that beginning stuff that's like being sorted through. And us as coaches, we still have a job to do. So we still have to adapt. We got to figure it out. We got to, you know, whether I'm a fan of it or not,
it's irrelevant.
Yeah, just say, yeah, it's irrelevant. Right. I'm not going to say I'm not going in the portal because that ain't going to help. You know, right. Everybody else did. So, right. You know, you just learn to roll with it and try to develop systems in it. I think that's something that's been really the part of it of coaches, is like a lot more coaches speak to like their system of it. Because the first year it was just like anything goes. You're just calling people. You don't know. Whereas now we have like a vetting process of how we go through it, you know, from a standpoint of like what we ask and all the people we talk to and, you know, certain things that are just non-negotiable. And then you go on synergy and what we're watching and how we, you know, divvy that. So it's a lot more systemic now, which brings a lot of comfort, because you at least know that like high school, even though it's way quicker still, you know, we're talking about recruiting a kid for 2, 3, 4 years to now recruiting a kid in a couple weeks. But we're trying to develop some things that at least allow us to get to know more and feel a little bit better about our decisions. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we let you go, thanks so much. I've been wanting to have this conversation for a long time, because, you know, it's just been great seeing you progress. And, you know, and now, of course, you're at the point you just got to win, baby. What is it? Just win.
Just win, baby. Just win.
Did you feel that? I mean, I don't know if you felt that pressure as an assistant, but I'm sure you certainly have to feel it as an assistant. I guess you kind of want to win, but sure. You don't feel the same pressure as a head coach.
For sure. You feel it in different ways. You feel it different as a head coach for sure. But I you know, I think what it comes down to is, you know, we all have to take that leap at some point to go and do what we dreamed about doing. Right. And so now that I'm here, it's like, I got this time period to do this, to impact lives, to coach basketball, to win championships, to do all the things. And that's the fun part. Like, you got to find some fun in that. You know, I'm going to try my very best. Our staff's going to try our very best. And I feel like if we do it in this way, right, the systems, the culture, building the foundation, we're going to get there. And you can't account for things like massive injuries. I tell everybody, like, okay, this first year, I'm knocking on all the wood, but I don't think we can ever have a year where we have this drastic, but I'd rather have it in year one than right. year 3, 4, 5. Right. So it's a process like anything else. And it takes time and patience. And I just go back to the stories or the programs that I follow that were built from the ground up, where those first couple years, you're trying to figure it out, but you know, you're making progress and you know, you're doing it the right way. You know, you're going to get those kids that are going to believe in what you believe in and get you to that point. So, you know, that's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me rolling, is the fact that we're building, we're growing, the Huskies are coming. You know, it's just got to happen in the way it needs to happen.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you about the state of the game at another angle, which is opportunities, particularly for, you know, Black women coaches. And I know in 2020 there was a huge, on both sides, men's and women's, there was an increase in the hires of Black men and women head coaches. I know on the men's side, things are good. You know, I'm looking at these new hires this year. It looks like, you know, I don't know if it's going to keep up. But on the women's side, what do you feel about, you know, are you seeing real change in that area where more Black women are getting the opportunity?
Yeah, I think a lot of coaches who are former players are getting opportunities. We joke, some of my best friends, we all are coaching in the CAA right now, and we all kind of had the same path, and we all are literally in the same conference coaching. Like, one of my best friends, Aaron Dickerson Davis, is at William & Mary. One of my other best friends, Sarah Jenkins, is at the head coach at Delaware. Mm-hmm. One of my other best friends, Nicole Woods, is at UNC Wilmington. And we all got the jobs within the past 2 years.
Wow.
And we all started at, you know, same low D1, mid-major, and then got to this point and we all played, right? And so the opportunity to play the game, you know, be a part of growing the game, and then getting an opportunity to give back to the game as an assistant and then eventually a head coach, I think that's a cycle that's really rewarding. And I think that's a cycle that you want to see more as more women are having great experiences as players and then, you know, deciding to give back to the game by becoming coaches. And so I think the fact that Black women are getting opportunities is a product of we're playing the game. We're playing the game and we know the game, and now we're getting a chance to teach the game. And that's awesome, you know.
Yeah, thank God for Dawn Staley. I was almost saying, because she's almost become, for women, what John Thompson was. She's almost become the John Thompson figure.
For sure.
In terms of everything, you know, in terms of the gravitas. She speaks her mind.
Sure.
You know, so I think it's...
There's Coach Leggett Jack at Syracuse, you know, who's been doing it a long time. And, you know, one of the few who a couple of years ago spoke out, you know, in her NCAA tournament, talking about giving opportunities to Black women. You know, you got Coach Yo, you know, down in Ole Miss, who's done an incredible job of bringing energy and passion to the game. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of Coach Joni, you know, down in Texas A&M. Like, there's a lot of coaches here who are paving the way too. And, you know, Coach Peck won her championship at Purdue and gave Dawn a piece of the net. And that literally motivated her to, you know, to get her first championship. So, you know, again, I think these women exist, these stories exist, right? And shout out to you guys for you know, telling them and making sure that, you know, folks are getting their flowers.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, we can't wait for you to get your flowers. Yes. I mean, like,
we'll be watching.
We'll be watching.
Everybody support, you know, yeah. Northeastern Women's Basketball. We're making some moves. So
nice.
Well, best of luck. I know there is no rest. I mean, there's no such thing as downtime, you know.
Go get in that portal.
Go get it. Portal combat. portal combat and recruiting, you know.
Recruiting. Yeah. So. I keep wanting to wrap this up. But the thing that fascinates me about the portal, particularly, you know, I'm focused on HBCU, it's kind of like two things. Everybody's become somebody's minor league, you know. Like, you've got, you know, like, I was talking to this guy, Bo Ryan, who used to coach at Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking, Bo was an old school, you know, I remember, yeah. But then he was saying, he referred to his son, who had just gotten fired as head coach at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. And it's precisely because, like, 1 year, like, almost all his kids transferred.
Mm-hmm.
He started with, like, four players because everybody had transferred. And you could fire. So it's a reality that is, you know. So I guess my question was, where are you sort of in the pecking order of, yeah, I don't know how many players left and I don't know how many players are coming in.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
The Power Five is always going to be at the top of the food chain, you know, because they have a lot to offer. You know, coming from that level, you see it firsthand. The NIL is different. The collectives are different. The resources, all those things. But you have players that start there, don't have the experience that they think they were going to have. And, you know, for many of them, they get to that point from where it's about those things. It's about the locker room. It's about the, you know, are we Nike? Are we this? Are we that? And then it very quickly becomes, I want to play. I want to play and I want to enjoy my experience. You know, our team, we had 3 Power Five transfers, didn't average double figure minutes at their prior institutions. One was all conference first team. One was 6 Woman of the Year, and one was, like, you know, top 3 in the league in assist, you know, and it's just, players have to come to that revelation on their own that, like, the grass isn't always greener, or it's about fit. And I think for us, where we come is, we're going to get high school players who see us as a great fit because we're a great academic institution, and we're also in a really competitive basketball conference. And when you want an opportunity to have both, and then have a real opportunity to play and impact, then they find that we're more appealing than maybe some places where roster stack, they're bringing in folks all the time, things like that. And then from a transfer perspective, after you take that stop and it doesn't go as well, you know, we're still at a really competitive level, we have parity in our league. So like anybody can win it. It's not like you got the top and the rest of are just trying to figure it out. So you get the opportunity to have all these things that you thought you were going to get, but maybe, you know, you didn't get that first go round. And now you're coming to our level and you're experiencing the playing, the winning, you know, the opportunity to impact. Because for the ones who want to play pro, you gotta show you can do something too. And even for the ones who don't, they want to have a good opportunity and a good experience. So, you know, we fall in the place of we're a great destination. We're in a great city. We're in Boston. You know, a lot to appeal. Now I'm doing my recruiting pitch. So I'm send it to the recruits. But you know, we fall in a good place. But like anywhere else, it's a battle, right? So right now, folks are entertaining everything else, and then we're like, we're here. You know, like we got some good stuff brewing over here too. So, you know, we end up getting the right ones. We end up getting ultimately the ones who are the right fits for us.
Right. And you can't, again, last question, seriously. But it's
well, I know you. It's never the last question.
No, this is. We got to eat. I know you got to go. But, you know, so you do this developing. I'm thinking, too, of the HBCU experience. You know, they used to be known as getting diamonds in the rough. You get these diamonds in the roughs, and then the late 60s or whatever, you'd have all these great pro athletes who are these diamonds in the rough. But the diamonds in the rough can't exist because as soon as you become exposed as this diamond, now you're snatched up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's the same experience. Like you're doing all this and you coach them up and they come to you for the experience and it's great. And then they become really good. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you keep them?
It's the reality, you know, it's like anything else is you do the best you can and you hope that the relationship piece and the fit and you know, all of those things keep them. But, you know, it's the reality of our game right now. It's just that happens. And so, you know, planning ahead and trying to be diligent in recruiting and having the next up is where we have to go. Right. There's no other solution. We can sit and cry about it, or we can hope that, you know, we're going to continue to develop players really well to the point where they're getting poached. You know, it means we're doing something right.
Yeah, so, that's one way to look at it.
You got to look at it somehow because it's happening. And you know, and on the men's side more so, you know, I think about, you know, NIL, how much of a factor that is. You can do everything right and still, if you don't have $100,000, $200,000, you're going to lose a player. So, you know, I think it's just one of those things where, like all things and what I was speaking to earlier, it'll settle eventually. It'll change eventually into what? I don't know. But as of right now, you got to still push forward and get players better and, you know, hope that they can have a good experience.
Yeah. I guess it's been the great Priscilla Edwards. Just finished her first year as a head coach at Northeastern. And we look forward to having her on next season when she's talking about winning the conference championship. And then she'll
now
say,
we're talking.
Too busy. I can't, you know, tell me, you know, I got games to play. I got
talk things. To me after the tournament.
Yeah, talk to me after the tournament. Oh, man. But Priscilla, thank you so much. You're the best. And congratulations, by the way. It's a little late. You got married.
I did.
We're probably like, was it?
Congratulations.
Yeah, what is it?
August. It was August. Last year. Right. That's how you know it was fast. I remember just telling you about it, and now it's already happened, and we're like almost a year deep. Ooh. So thank you.
Yeah, so there may be other things to talk about, like another thing in terms of, you know, my daughter just had her first child and my first grandchild. And you see, you know, again, this is a different conversation, but just how women, there are things that women on the ladder have to deal with that men do not, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole nother issue. But indeed, it gives you a whole nother perspective of the battle that's out here. Jamal's been great. Anything else to add?
Not really. I think we covered everything.
Yeah. Okay. I guess we have to deal with the college, you know, college basketball's over. You know, we have these doldrums, you know, baseball, I don't know.
WNBA season starting in, you know, less
than right, next week.
You know,
the play coming up.
Monday, yep. And then
the NFL draft. Yeah, actually, there's stuff.
Things.
WNBA draft, right?
WNBA draft's coming right around the corner.
Monday.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's here, right? It's in New York.
I got a question about that. I've been thinking about the WNBA. Is it time
to expand?
To expand and also, you know, make it a real league and not a summer league. You know, like during the basketball season.
I think that's relevant. Like it is a real league.
It's a real league, but I mean, just
coincides with the fact that many have to go and play overseas.
But would that be the case if it were like a longer season in the traditional basketball, like women's college basketball is in the basketball season, you know, the traditional basketball season. It's not in the summer.
Yeah. Right? I mean, the traditional basketball season is happening in Europe where the money is being made. So WNBA players would love to stay stateside and play all year long, but some of them are making what they make in the WNBA season in a month, in 2 months. So many are like, all right, got it. Let's wrap it up. Got to go to Spain. Got to go to Russia. Got to go to wherever. And so, you know, that's a whole nother thing, because the WNBA has tried to, as they continue to grow and figure it out, they've tried to implement some things like if you got to be here at the start of the season, because some pro seasons overseas were trickling into, if you make the playoffs, the WNBA season. But it's really hard when you're making your living in Europe.
Right.
Say, okay, I'm going to leave. I'm going to break my contract to come and start this season. Yeah. So that's just one of those things. And Bill, we talked about a little bit when we were talking about Brittany Griner in that whole situation. Mm-hmm. It's you got to make a living, right? And so, you know, of course, everybody would want to play in the States where their family and everything is. But until that portion gets to the level of where it needs to be, there's two seasons that are being played. And so you got to manage both.
Is the overseas draw that much bigger? Like why can you make money out there? What's the difference?
It's more funding into it. You know, a lot of the different countries have like federations and things set up and they have a lot of private, you know, investors in it too, like a lot of, you know, team owners who are really wealthy and want to invest in sports. And so they want to have the best men's and women's programs, you know, teams. And you see it a lot in football over there, right? Like all the Real Madrids and those teams, mm-hmm. like it's the same level of greatness amongst all their sports teams. And so they're willing to invest just as much to get the best players for America because they want to win. They want to win championships in football, women's basketball, men's basketball, whatever other sport they're playing.
Right.
So it's just a different level of investment, quite frankly. You know, you think about the billionaires here, if you know, and many of them who are into sports, if they wanted to expand, buy a WNBA team and open it up tomorrow, they could. But many don't. You know, I see people investing in pickleball now, I think it is. Like LeBron, everybody. No offense, right?
Right. I mean, yeah.
But that's what, you know, they're choosing. If they don't see the value just yet to say, I'm going to take my money and fund this. You're seeing it some, but not to the level that it needs to. And maybe this year helps with that. You know, maybe they see, you know, what we're able to do more and more. And that's why the years like this are so important. Because you start to see, if we do invest, it does, you know, give the level of investment back, right? The rate of return in that. So that's where it's at. That's where it's at. So if you know any billionaires that
I'll look around.
That want to start a team, fund Northeastern's collective.
Right.
We'll be solving the world's problems, man.
Wouldn't that be great? Get a multi-billionaire. Yeah, well, we'll work on it, Priscilla.
Somebody put Bezos on the line. Somebody put, you know, somebody on the line, and just let me talk to him. I just need 30 minutes.
All right, we'll see. Jamal's our booker. We'll see if we can work.
Make it happen.
I'll try.
Hey, everybody, listen. It's been great, Priscilla. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful, Jamal. Great job as usual. And everybody out there, you know, have a great weekend. We'll hopefully see you next week. If we could do something else as a draft, we got to talk about that. And Caleb and all these young, potentially billionaires. All right, man. Let's get out of here.
Thanks, all right. Guys.
See you.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.